It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Mary Louise Kelly. The Biden administration has a lot of foreign policy challenges on its plate, from the conflict in Ethiopia and a coup in Myanmar to Iran's nuclear program and relations with Russia. But Secretary of State Anthony Blinken sees China as the biggest geopolitical test. NPR's Michelle Kellerman explains why.
Secretary Blinken says he wants to lead a foreign policy that better serves Americans at home. And while he has a long list of crises to deal with, he says the challenge from China is different.
China is the only country with the economic, diplomatic, military, and technological power to seriously challenge the stable and open international system, all the rules, values, and relationships that make the world work the way we want it to.
He outlined his views in a speech Wednesday meant for the American public. Without mentioning Trump by name, he was clearly trying to turn a page from the last 4 years.
Our relationship with China will be competitive when it should be, collaborative when it can be, and adversarial when it must be. The common denominator is the need to engage China from a position of strength. That requires working with allies and partners, not denigrating them.
Real strength, he added, isn't bluster or bullying. Aside from China, his top priorities include fighting the coronavirus pandemic and working with partners to tackle climate change. Blinken said there's work to be done here, too, in the wake of the mob attack on the Capitol in January.
Shoring up our democracy is a foreign policy imperative. Otherwise, we play right into the hands of adversaries and competitors like Russia and China, who seize every opportunity to sow doubts about the strength of our democracy. We shouldn't be making their jobs easier.
His pitch is that America is better off with more democracies working together. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
Blockchain has taken the art world by storm. That is the technology that powers cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. These digital art pieces, paintings, GIFs, and videos are fetching tens of thousands, even millions of dollars online. Some big names in music have started offering fans crypto collectibles. Christie's has even started auctioning crypto art pieces, and a small choral group in Dallas thinks their new piece could also draw big bucks using this technology. Miguel Perez with member station KERA sat in on a recording session with Verdigris Ensemble to find out more.
Can we stop? Sorry to be a pain.
Producer Anthony Maglione is shuffling through sheet music inside a recording studio in Dallas. It's almost 10 p.m., the end of a five-hour session for the singers on the other side of the glass.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that was a much better take. Well done.
Sam Bruckman, the founder of Verdigris Ensemble, is sitting next to Maglione. They're in the middle of recording a piece called Betty's Notebook, which composer Nicholas Reeves based on the story of Betty Klenk, who claimed to have heard distress signals from Amelia Earhart on her radio.
It's like we're putting the audience in front of a really old 1930s radio, but there's all of this sort of like white noise and jazz standards and other things that block us from clearly hearing what Amelia Earhart was saying on that day.
Now, the group has performed Betty's Notebook live before, but this time they're working with a digital art platform called Async Art to transform this new recording into a one-of-a-kind sound installation using blockchain technology. Bruckman wants to sell the piece to the highest bidder.
We've gotten very positive feedback from several museums and galleries across the world. Whether that's actually going to happen, I just don't know.
The Choral Group has poured a lot of money into this, hiring a production team and buying valuable studio time. It's a huge risk.
But I wouldn't do it if I didn't like really truly see the vision and how it could be successful. And I see it so clearly.
The use of blockchain in the digital art world has been gaining steam for several years now. So how does it work? Well, let's say you create a digital painting and you share it on Twitter. It goes viral and it's copied and pasted all over the internet. Now, you don't get a cent from that and no one even knows that you made it. But what if you had created a piece of code, a unique digital token attached to the work that helps solve the problem?
You can prove that you're the original owner of something that exists online, an image that exists online, a video that exists online, in ways that have never been possible before.
Blake Finucane wrote one of the first academic papers on tokenized art. These digital works are known as NFTs, non-fungible tokens, and that means they're not interchangeable. Each one is special and identifiable. It's that non-fungibility that helps keep track of things like provenance and authenticity. Finucane says that, in turn, creates scarcity for digital art. Elena Zavalev has spent a lot of time explaining NFTs to art professionals as the founder of New Art Academy in New York.
The clearest value potentially is actually artists getting paid sort of like a royalty on the resale of their works.
Musicians can write their own royalty terms into an NFT, for example, guaranteeing a 10% cut every time the piece is resold. Music and technology writer Sherry Hu says this kind of system could be a game changer in music, where artists get paid fractions of a penny per stream.
All signs seem to be pointing to like a race to the bottom on pricing. Royalty rates have actually not been increasing. They've only been decreasing kind of as these streaming services scale. And that's definitely worrying to a lot of artists and to the music industry. So anything that can kind of help reverse that course is appealing to them.
Instead of chasing streams by the millions, who says musicians could sell a single NFT, say to a superfan or a gallery, for a similar price tag? Now, that's not the same as buying the definitive sole copy of a song, though. The artist hasn't handed over the copyright or the distribution rights to the music.
Something I often say that's like makes more sense to the music industry, it's like a digital piece of rare merch.
Like a unique GIF paired with an unreleased demo. That's what Canadian pop artist Grimes just auctioned off. One of her debut NFTs sold for more than $380,000. And Sam Bruckman with Verdigris is banking on a similar outcome for his choral group. He set the bidding to start at $150,000.
We could very well, at the end of this entire process, sell Betty's Notebook and actually like make a profit and be able to support and give a fair wage, not just to our producer or our sound engineer or the composer, but also to the singers.
Certain corners of the music world are well versed in crypto art, like electronic artists, but an NFT from a choral group is pretty much unheard of. Whether crypto art is a passing fad or the future of art collecting, right now, Verdigris is hoping it'll pay off. I'm Miguel Perez in Dallas.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Fidelity. With Fidelity Income Planning, Fidelity looks at how much clients saved, how much they'll need, and helps them build a plan for cash flow so they can go from saving to living. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. From the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, committed to supporting ideas and institutions to advance education for all, preserve the environment, and promote vibrant performing arts. More information is available at hewlett.org. And from iDrive, providing cloud backup, full system backup, and on-site iDrive appliance to protect PCs, Macs, and servers from data loss due to crashes and ransomware. At iDrive.com/NPR.